Listening Dog Media.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The Offside Rule with Lindsay Hooper and Natasha Dowie, promoting women's football since 2013.
Another busy week of women's football, which means another Offside Rule podcast. Natasha Dowie joins myself, Lindsay Hooper, for another reaction to a weekend of different results. We'll go through those in just a moment, the ones that we're going to react to. We'll also be speaking to Julie Grundy for our In the Spotlight section, looking back on Doncaster Bells. When they were relegated in 2013, they were demoted and Manchester City came into WSL. It was a sliding doors moment, it felt, in time for the league. And then we'll have Tash's scouting report, which is going back to attackers, isn't it, Tash, this week?
You know this. It was killing me the last couple of weeks doing defenders and goalies, so I'm back feeling good talking about my attackers.
And what have you been doing over the last 7 days since we last spoke?
Yeah, so I've actually been away with Liverpool. We had our partner summit in the Cotswolds in a gorgeous place called Lakes by You. So kind of networking, meeting all the partners that obviously look after Liverpool. It was real eye-opener for me and great to be a part of that. And then I had a busy weekend. I was at the Etihad watching the Manchester Derby. I was live working for BBC Five Live and then doing the Merseyside Derby yesterday for LFC TV. So I am all ready for my match reports.
Well, a derby weekend for Tash, so no surprises that we're going to start with your first match that we're going to react to from the weekend is one of the derbies. And looking at all the results and having watched these myself on TV, I can tell you it's not going to be Everton-Liverpool that we're focusing on, which was 0-0. We're going to reflect on Manchester City 3, Man United 1. And City in this hunt for the title with Chelsea. How do you think that this performance compared to some of their recent ones?
I think it was a top performance. I really do. I think going into the game, I fancied City on form. United can always cause an upset, but I just think they've struggled this year, if I'm being completely honest. And I think they'll be really disappointed with, you know, where they sit now in the table. But yes, they started the game quite lively, actually, Lindsay. I've got to admit, United, they had a couple of chances early on that potentially, if they had taken, it could have been a different story. But then really from the 20-minute mark, City controlled the game. You know, they dominated Jess Park and Bunny Shaw, but Jess Park in particular, I have to highlight her. You know, getting two goals, really two well-taken goals. There was a bit of controversy with the first one because Bunny Shaw was actually offside in the build-up play. But still, I think City deserved it in the end. And Jess Park getting an assist as well for Bunny Shaw. She's just brilliant, technically so good, can find those pockets just in behind the midfield line in front of the back four for Man United. And she was causing them all sorts of problems. And she's got her opportunity through Broad being injured with her ACL, but she has taken it. She really has. And getting now involved with England set up as well. I think that's a big difference, Lindsay, between the two teams. I said it before the game. United, no disrespect to their forwards, they've got some good forwards, but they haven't got a Bunny Shaw, you know, and I think Bunny Shaw would have taken those opportunities for United early on. If you look at Jay's, she's got one goal this season for United. That's not good enough at that level, playing for a top team. You have to be contributing more. Mallard as well. Some of these big signings that they've brought over haven't produced. So I think really overall City deserved the win. I think they were phenomenal. When United got the own goal, they kind of showed a little bit of fight, maybe the last 10-15 minutes, but it's too late, you know, and that's now three derbies in a row they've lost. They've dropped down to fifth in the league. Liverpool obviously overtook them by getting a point in the Merseyside derby. And I really do fancy City, Lindsay, to go on and win this WSL. With the amount of games Chelsea have, with obviously being involved in all the other competitions still, I just think this is going to be City's year.
Ooh. Well, I'm glad that you've gone there. You mentioned about Manchester United, the players that they've brought in, not hitting the ground running as much. And we have seen that with Chelsea. You know, everyone that they've brought in has integrated into the squad and had an immediate impact. But do you think that's further compounded for Man United? Because the players that they've let go out on loan, like Grace Clinton, for instance, have been tearing it up. It just makes that situation look worse, doesn't it, somehow?
Absolutely. You know, and you don't even think of Grace Clinton when you think of the likes of letting Russo go. Bagier obviously left, two best players. Then Clinton probably having one of the standout seasons of her career so far, got into the England setup, really playing well at Tottenham. And then the amount of talk then with Mary Earps, every transfer window, it's is Earps leaving? Is she staying? I think there's just been too much talk off the pitch. And I think that really has then distracted United with their performances. And Mark Skinner talks about how they overachieved last year and how people shouldn't really, I guess, compare them to last season's performances. But they have to, Lindsay. It's like a player. You know, if Bunny Shaw's top goal scorer this year and then next year she doesn't perform, people are going to obviously, you know, I guess, criticise her slightly because she's not at that level that she's performed. If United were competing for the title last season, in my eyes, they should have recruited, they should have really worked hard to then go up another level. But I don't think they did this summer. I think they've really dropped off. So this summer is going to have to be huge for them if they want to then take that step again to stay with that top three.
So if we put a pin in Man United and say, OK, they might not be where they were last season, where is City compared to last season from this result? Because, yeah, it was a great performance, but have they gone up? Do you think that they're a better side?
100%. I think we know with City, they're technically the strongest team in the league, the way they possess the ball, their playing style, you know, it filters through from the men's team, the academy, into the women's team. But I think what I've loved this season is the defensive side of their game. You know, they've rolled up their sleeves and they've at times learned how to play a bit more ugly, learned how to kind of grind out results that maybe in the past they didn't. And I think really defensively, this is why they are where they are this season. They've looked so strong. You know, some top performers, the likes of Alex Greenwood, you know, Keating has been obviously a standout player for them as well, such a young goalkeeper. But I think as a whole unit, they've just been so solid. And then you know that they've got players in the team that then are going to produce and score you goals. So I think that's the big reason. And I'm really excited moving forward. You know, there's been rumours of maybe Hemp going to Barcelona. She's now then apparently reported that she wants to commit her future to City. So I think that's good. I think winning the league could potentially keep players. I would worry if City didn't win the league, that maybe then you might lose your Hemps, you might lose your Chloe Kellys, you might lose maybe your bigger players because they want to be winning trophies and they haven't won a league yet at City. So I think this could be vital to keeping some of their star players.
And City really stood by Gareth Taylor as well. He went through a period of scrutiny. I think there was a lot of questions asked about his future. He then got a new deal. And you think sometimes these clubs, how often do we talk about it when they ride this wave, come out the other side, and it's all for the better? Sometimes it's so easy to just change coaches and be a bit trigger happy at the top. But is that something that Man United actually should learn from as well? Do they stick with Mark Skinner? Because there are cries from certain aspects of that support base that think maybe a change is needed. But is there a bigger picture here and they should just stick with?
Yeah, I think 100%. I think that it would be harsh to get rid of Mark Skinner with how well he did do last year and the way that he's built United and the way they've progressed year on year. Yes, this year is a little bit of a blip. You know, they could still finish maybe top four, but I think you need to give him that opportunity to maybe rebuild, recover from obviously the players that he has lost this season, and then give him an opportunity next year. And like you said, I think Gareth Taylor's the perfect example of that. I think there's been numerous times where there was talks of him getting sacked, and then to kind of offer him that 3.5 year deal and to really kind of give him that faith, I think that's then shown that bit of stability, and you can see that in the performances now. The players know where they stand. They know who they're moving forward with as a manager. And I think that's really important.
I've gone for the FA Women's National League Cup match, which I know you struggled to find. It was on the Red Bull. It was on the BBC, actually. And then I've found some highlights as well since. So hopefully you got to see those. But wow. I mean, hashtag United beat Newcastle 2-1. But this was a game played at Kenilworth Road, by the way, Luton's home ground. But Newcastle, as we know, they've been steamrolling through. They've been having investment. The owners have taken this very seriously. The fan base is huge. It's got everything going for it, hasn't it, Newcastle, to go into WSL at some point. You'd expect them to be a mainstay in the future. Of course, they've got some navigating to do first and promotions to get before that all happens. But this League Cup, they were 1-0 ahead. It was an own goal that gave them the lead. But then two goals from hashtag United to come back. The comeback for them was just incredible to be able to do this. Maisie Nichols, beautiful volley from her to get them level. And then Phoebe Williams, it was one option, really. There was a cut back on. They hadn't had much at all. There was a cut back. Phoebe Williams was in space and the ball found her. And it was one of those where you just thought it was the perfect move, but they hadn't really had that many chances. And for Newcastle, I'm sure they're going to be gutted about this. It would have been silverware in the cabinet. But you've got to talk about hashtag United, a team that not many of us know that much about, really.
So what's the difference, Lindsay, between like the leagues? Because we obviously know Newcastle are top of tier three. So a hashtag in the league below, or what's the gap?
So it's they're not all that different. It's not like, oh, there's 40 league places between them. Mm-hmm. Hashtag United have been established and doing well, actually, in their league. I mean, there isn't massive, massive difference in terms of that. But it was still the underdog. They were the underdog for many of the reasons that I said. You know, it wasn't just... You look at the squad that's been assembled in that Newcastle squad, they've got championship-ready players. They're ready for the championship, aren't they? So in terms of quality... It was a surprise. I thought they did well on the day.
So what do you think it was from watching the highlights back? Do you think it was Newcastle turning up thinking they've already won it? Or do you think hashtag, did they defend for their lives? Or did Newcastle waste opportunities? Like, how did the game plan out?
There were some Newcastle wasted opportunities, but I think they dominated the ball more than actually did much with it in the final third. That would be my assessment. And I think Newcastle really did at times look like they were in control of this match. But it is the nature of football. You can have a team that's just not getting as much of the ball, but they get that one chance and they score. And I think it was that. I think that hashtag United, on the chances that they got, they managed to do something with them.
Yeah. And their first silverware, isn't it? Is that correct? Their first brilliant.
What an absolute ride they've had all weekend, I'm sure. Newcastle as well, play your team that you always talk about, Liverpool Feds, at home next.
Yes, I'm going to try and get along to that, actually. Yeah, I'm actually coaching the Feds tomorrow night. They had a disappointing draw, actually, against a team that they should have beat. But to be honest, truthfully, I think just staying in the league is a priority. They're sixth at the moment, but I think they would be disappointed with that. So I need to get into them tomorrow night, make sure we're flying come Newcastle.
Well, we'll say a big congratulations to hashtag United on their first silverware. Really impressive stuff. What a performance. And that'll go down then for you in history. For Newcastle, have you been in a team where you've lost something like that? Because it wasn't just losing the final, which you're expected to win. It was the manner, I think, of the goal. They didn't actually score. It was an own goal. So they never really managed to take their grip of this game. They need two more wins to secure the title, which will get them into the championship. And like I say, they've got Liverpool Feds next. How do they respond to this? How do you, as a team, if you've been in that situation, then galvanise?
Yeah, absolutely. I think they've got a lot to play for, which I think is the most positive thing. I think realistic, they would have loved to have won some silverware, but I think their main priority this year would have been getting promotion into the championship. And to be honest, I think that's going to be done. I think that's achievable. I think they're too far ahead for any team really to catch them now. So I think they look at it as, and it's a disappointment, but bigger picture, they've still got a great opportunity now to get promoted. And I think, yeah, they've got lots to play for. I don't think it'll take them much to get motivated for their next game. And I think it's good when you have a next game soon. You want to almost forget about that now and get back on the training pitch, have a good week training, and then make sure you get your 3 points come the next game. And then hopefully, or for them in a couple of weeks' time, maybe they'll be celebrating promotion.
Yeah, and that is the one that they want to celebrate. You're right. I will mention a couple of big scorelines as well in the Championship that hopefully they want to get into. Sheffield United beat Reading 5-1. Did you see that result? And Sunderland 5, Durham 3. So a couple
wild,
of
brilliant.
We can't predict it week on week. And finally, you've chosen for your third match for us to reflect on from the weekend, another derby, but this time over in Spain. Real Madrid 0, Barcelona 3.
Yeah, I think whenever I have a little look on the flash score to see what games are coming up this weekend, there's always a few that catch my eye. You know, the likes of the Bayern Munich versus Wolfsburg. That was one I was maybe thinking of talking about as well. But it was quite interesting because I've got some close friends that play for Real Madrid, the likes of Senior Brun, Caroline Muller, obviously Hayley Razzo plays over there now. So there's a few friends of mine. And a lot of talk. They've done a lot of talk off the pitch. You know, we're going to knock Barcelona off their pedestal. We're going to get the win. And actually, Graham Hansen after the game quoted, you know, we'll just carry on winning. You do your talking. You kind of pretend like you're actually closing the gap when realistically, Lindsay, they're not. And actually, I wanted to highlight this game more actually so as a bit of a worry, I think, for the Spanish league because Barcelona are 12 points ahead. 12 points ahead of Real Madrid, who are in second.
The gap looks bigger than ever, doesn't it, as well, like between them. When you saw them in this match, I thought the gap looked massive. A couple of seasons ago, we had that. Do you remember the one where there was 90,000 fans and it was really, really tight match? But it feels like Barcelona have kicked on into another gear. But then I look at their squad. They are buying up all the best players. I mean, Rolfa, Bonmati, oh, come on, you know.
Yeah.
Give everyone else a chance. Graham Hansen as well.
Absolutely. Graham Hansen, 17 goals and in the 19 games and 16 assists. Like, it's just crazy, the stats. And I think they are on another level right now. But I just worry with the Spanish league. It does become a bit boring, let's be honest. You know, and I think, how do those Barcelona players motivate themselves every year? Obviously, they've got Champions League that they want to obviously fight for, and that's a bit more competitive. But you're pretty much guaranteed year on year to win the league. You know, it's a little bit closer between like second and fourth. I think there's only maybe 6-7 points between them kind of teams. But that league, they have to somehow start investing more, you know, in the teams below Barcelona to try and bridge that gap again. Because, 12 points, you know, you don't want that. You want it to be exciting like it is in the WSL, you know, like it has been in the other leagues. I think for me, that gap's just way too big.
Who did you think was Real Madrid's best player in this one?
It's tough. Truthfully, I think they struggled. I think they struggled to get going full stop, to be honest. And I think that is a difference when I look at the Real Madrid team. I don't see any real game changers, if I'm being completely honest. They've got good players. They've got good international players. But I think when you look at the Barcelona team throughout the pitch, I mean, you've got Lucy Bronze and people like that on the bench. You know, their bench, you could have a starting 11, truthfully, and probably would still beat the Real Madrid team. So I think this summer, it has to be big. You know, their transfer window, it has to be a key area for them to start trying to poach. And financially, I don't know what they can offer compared to Barcelona as well. But look, living in Madrid, there's a lot of, it's a big pool. But truthfully, I don't think there was many standouts in that Real Madrid team, if I'm being completely honest, Lindsay. I think it was more of a domination by Barcelona.
Those then are our three matches from the weekend. We'll leave those there. And all they're going to do is get better and better week on week now because we're getting towards the finale of every single league. And you've got a lot to keep across, Tash, so keep looking abroad. And we'll go to In the Spotlight next with Julie Grundy, who once upon a time assisted Neil Redfern at Doncaster Bells. We're going to go and have a dip into history.
The Offside Rule with Lindsay Hooper and Natasha Dowie.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
The Offside Rule with Lindsay Hooper and Natasha Dowie.
A big Offside Rule welcome to Julie Grundy, who assisted Neil Redfern at Doncaster Bells. And we want to go over this, Julie, dredging up the past, but I think it's important that we do. So Donny Bells at the time, I think you need to set the stall as to what sort of team they were. I know that they won the FA Cup six times. They were an established team. What are we talking about in terms of standard?
Well, you're talking, this club has got history in abundance. It was formed in 1969 through females just going around at Bellevue and selling tickets, lottery tickets, and that was them. Hewlett Edmonds, who was literally the founder of that club, is still in place now as director. And if you ever want to speak about the history of women's football in Doncaster, Shirley is the person to speak to, because she's literally, you know, she's Doncaster Bells through and through. But we always knew about Doncaster Bells, and I'm not sure Tash will as well. When she started playing, when I started playing, I was 16 when I started playing, it wasn't any youth system involved. And Doncaster Bells was always the history that you always went to. There was, you know, the top team in that time. The history of winning FA Cups, abundance, leagues, there's probably about half that team, maybe three quarters of the team at that time in that era was actually representing England at the time, which unfortunately wasn't obviously renowned for now, unfortunately. But now, so as we come forward, flying through the years, I actually went to Doncaster Bells back in 2010 after leaving Leeds United. It was a little bit same situation that Doncaster fell into, unfortunately. And that was Julie Chipchase, who is absolute legend of the game and legacy left behind, who unfortunately passed away two or three years ago. Her mentor and mantra was always going to be that Doncaster was going to be a development club. It would be, they'd develop players, but they'd also develop coaches and female coaches as well. So they had, she had a female mentoring programme, and I was part of that, along with Sue Smith, who works the FA now, Emma Coates, who's the under-23's head coach, and Sally Needham is now in Norway supporting the Gemma Granger with the head of the Human Resource Performance Team. So that's kind of what that club is about, and for want of a better word, probably the history of that is they are very much a development club. All in all, so my experience of the team, obviously, you know, there's been a long time since the Athletic Club had won anything. So when Neil came in on board, I actually, it was myself actually approached on behalf of Julie, because there's a few managers before, obviously, Neil that came in place, Gordon Staniforth, Glenn Harris, John Buckley, to name a few, and Emma Coates, one of those as well, for a short period of time. And Neil obviously brings a massive reputation of the game from an ex-pro footballer. He's managed at Leeds United in the men, but he had a definitely love for the women's football game, very empathetic. When he came in, he pulled me into the assistant role due to, because of my experience in the women's game, he just said, I wanted to learn, you know, you, in terms of how we bring that team together and how it forms. But we had some good players. You know, it was very such a score squad, because obviously the funding at Doncaster Rovers Bells at that time wasn't big. It never has been, never will be. The challenge of that was obviously competing in the what was then Championship. Sorry, WSL2 is now a Championship. We knew that when we got to the end of this end goal of fantastic season of winning league by 10 points, probably about a month before the season finished, we knew that we'd never get promotion to the WSL, because of the funds that carries with that and the criteria. So the challenge of that was really big, but I feel that my time there, definitely in my five-year spell at Doncaster Bells, has definitely brought me into a leadership role. I wouldn't have that opportunity if I didn't go to Bells, and I feel that that's just down to the, you know, the ethos of the club. It's such a family thought club. You know, Tash has played there. We've had some fantastic players crew from there. You know, we're actually standing on the shoulder of giants if you talk about what Doncaster Bells has formed. And if, in Tom's history, that's where the women games, if I think, has bled from, you know, like in terms of Arsenal, Man City, Man United now, you know, the top clubs that's come in, you've got to look back at where that all started. And for me, it's definitely Doncaster Bells.
Thank you very much to Julie for her time. And you can get that interview in full dropping down the same podcast feed where you got this one later this week. And then on Friday, we will have the mailbag where we answer some of your questions. Please do leave us a review as well. It helps other people find the show. 5 stars and a comment really does work and get other people's eyes on what we're doing. Thank you very much for that in advance if you get time this week to do it. Your scouting report next. You've gone back up front. So come on, give us the striker to look out for.
360, yeah. Start working my way from the forward line again. So got into my black book again, Lindsay, like I always do. I was talking to Alan for AV Sport. Asked him about any kind of up-and-coming strikers. And actually, he mentioned someone that you probably do recognise the name, Jodie Brown. She's 21 years old. She's centre-forward. Really good friends with Bunny Shaw, actually, part of the Jamaican national team. She's actually at Florida State University. They've just won the I guess they call it the national championship over there. So potentially now she could look to kind of go into the NWSL or look to go abroad and play professionally. But she's kind of at college football still. But really quick, pacey centre forward. Speaking to Alan, he said he almost, what does he say, like a troublemaker for defenders. You know, the way she drifts in and out. He actually compared her to like a Chloe Kelly, a Beth Mead, someone that can drift along the lines. Really good dribbler, can penetrate the back four. And personality-wise, he said, such a bubbly personality. Actually, her background, she comes from quite a poor background. Not really, a great environment from where she came from. So for her to then kind of work her way up and to be kind of achieving what she's achieving at such a young age, it's quite a lovely story. So I'm excited to maybe see now what her next step is, whether or not she wants to play in America or whether a big European club comes in for her. But yeah, Jodie Brown, 21 years old, centre forward.
Ooh, see, now, if you hadn't have said that Lauren Hemp was going to commit her future, and I said that Bunny Shaw might have been in Gareth's ear saying, oh, why not go for Jodie Brown? is she versatile? Can she play on both sides and drift in, or is she just
absolutely that's what Alan said as well, can work off the left and right hand side as well, so, and has an eye for goal. So look, it's someone that maybe even a City might want to bring in. You know, I think that they rely quite heavily on your Kellys and your Hemps. I know Mary Fowler of late has been getting some more game time, but you know, I think an extra winger for them wouldn't go amiss. So yeah, watch this space, I guess.
There could be a word in Gareth's ear from Bunny. And also, how great that she's got Bunny as a friend that she can tap up to see what WSL's like if she was thinking of coming over here. And also to just model yourself on what she's been doing, because she's had a fantastic season, hasn't she, Bunny Shaw? Thank you very much. Well, I'm so pleased that we're back at the strikers, working our way back. We might be up front for a little while, knowing Tash, but we'll see. Have a good rest of your week. What are you doing for the rest of it?
Do you know what, Lindsay? It is lovely. I haven't been home for probably about 4 weeks now. I've been on the road. So this week I have absolutely nothing planned. I'm catching up with Matt Beard tomorrow at Melwood. So I'll see all the girls and see how they're getting on. And then I've got a massage booked in for Thursday. And that is about it. So I'm going to enjoy some downtime this week.
I want a massage booked in for Thursday. we've had the opposite. So I had a pretty much quite a few days off in a row last week and a bit of a break. And Easter weekend for reporters, it's just, I've got so many games. So I'm in Cardiff, Nottingham Forest, then I'm at Plymouth Easter Monday. So I'm all over. So
I'll be sitting on my sofa watching you on the screens, waving to you.
Oh, bless you. Right, I'll see you next week. Take care.
See you.
The Offside Rule. This is a Listening Dog Media production. Podcast Network.